I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I talk to on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today is one of our face-off episodes, which departs from our typical interview format. There are so many different approaches and choices in business, it can get confusing. That's why I thought it would be fun to bring on two experts with different approaches to the same topic and let them debate it. After hearing both sides, you can pick the approach that works best for you. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Tony Grass, who is the president of eMarket Intelligence, and Richard Lehrmer, the CEO and founder of RLM Public Relations. Welcome to both of you. Please introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your work. Tony, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, thank you very much for your introduction. My background, very, very quickly, is I have built two small multi-million dollar businesses that use technology in for major clients and mid-sized clients in for sales and marketing. What eMarket Intelligence does has taken a look at the internet and said, number one, sales process is phenomenally wasteful. And the internet should have made it better, but it's still got the same 1 to 2% conversion ratios from traffic that cold calling does. And so we asked the question, what makes a sale on the internet? And it turns out that what makes a sale on the internet is the same thing as anywhere else. It's a customer finding what they want, how they want it, and when they want it. Now, on the internet, they've already decided 50 to 70% what they want before they search, and the keywords they're using to search tell you what it is that they want. So this enabled us to have a process that is currently being patented that enables us, in effect, to run the search engines backwards to find those customers by their searches who are actively looking for the products, the services, for any business that wants to market. In addition, because we are doing this by the numbers, for demand, we can project return on investment ahead of time for those businesses.
Richard, what's your background?
Oh, wow. I was just taking it in with what Tony was talking about. I'm the founder and CEO of RLM Public Relations. We're based in Midtown, New York. We've been in business for about 22 years. I'm known for obviously being the head of RLM, but also the author of several business books, two of which have been bestsellers. One is Full Frontal PR, which is still out and doing quite well and now is being used as a textbook around the country to teach people how PR is really done. And then the other book is Punk Marketing, which came out about 6 or 7 years ago and caused enough of a stir for us to... I was able to run around the world, basically, giving talks about how marketers need to wake up to what's going on around them and stop using the old ways of marketing. So that's me. Our method is distinctive in that we're a very nimble, small group. We're very aggressive and kind of very, I would say, very creative. And I believe in foregoing constant searches for news in place of trends that are burgeoning that we can get our clients to get behind. So we call that trend spotting, which is also the title. That's the title of my third book, which came out a couple of years ago. And so that's a plug for me. And I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for asking me to come on again.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure having both of you, and I'm looking forward to this discussion. So let's talk a little bit about promotion and return on investment. Do all types of promotion need to generate a hard return on investment, or ROI, to be worthwhile? Tony, why don't you start?
Well, that's terrific. That's a big question.
Yeah.
And I believe a good answer really is predicated on the size of company you're speaking about. For example, for major companies where brand is a huge part of their balance sheet, typically 30%, and it affects their capitalization, it affects the bank rates they get on their loans, then profiling is very, very much a part of their business. For small to mid-sized businesses, it's really about return on investment from the customers that you get. Return on investment is about a sale. And a sale, of course, is about a customer finding what they want. But also you need to find the customers who want what you can best supply. So it really, you have two different areas to go into.
You know, it's interesting to me. I mean, you're using the word promotion, and, you know, and it, that's a huge word, and it involves a lot of areas. I mean, there are definite areas where people have to get return on investment. I mean, what Tony works on is very specific and very geared toward numbers. We're much more in the relevance category. We're trying to build brands, and when you build a brand, there are things that you need to do PR-wise that don't necessarily form on any kind of ROI that you can touch, feel, or smell, but is for the long term really what that company needs, because they have to be selling something that, in many cases, people have no idea what it is. So I think in the relevance business, you're really carefully considering what you're putting out there to be sure that companies, Tony was talking about the smaller companies. I mean, they really need to get their name out there. And what we do is not a one-to-one scenario. It would be rarely. I mean, sometimes it is just purely by accident, but we don't look at what we do as one-to-one.
You know, although you both talked a little bit about the value of the brand of the company. Tony mentioned this 30% number for big companies, that the brand is worth 30% of the balance sheet. And I wondered, this area of promotion, yes, it's a big word, and it has lots of implications, but I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how promotion and maybe brand actually translate into hard numbers, and whether that, in fact, is really that important. Maybe you can start, Richard.
Yeah, I'm not sure in many cases that the type of promotion that we're talking about will reach a hard number, and I don't think it has to. Or, you know, if we're talking, it depends what we're talking about. I mean, in a prior discussion that I had with Tony, we just talked about PR, and PR is it's not that it's impossible to tell exactly what happens from it, and there of course are methods and companies out there that will show you how certain pieces of press or certain blog posts were move the needle, if you will, on a website that goes toward a corporate situation. But I'm not one to when I say brand, I really mean brand from the brand architecture point of view. From where we're talking, the people that we deal with are really looking for a kind of notoriety, that you will, that sort of rises above the noise. And if that steady drumbeat keeps going, we know we've done a good job.
So, Tony, what are your thoughts about the value, the concrete value of the brand, or why promotion is so important to drive ROI?
Well, there's two things. First, a definition of branding, and there's many definitions of branding. It can be anywhere from the way your logo looks to how you're regarded. There's a very handy definition for my end of the business, which is selling, enabling clients to sell and get the best customers. And that is this: if your product or your service is a promise that you're making to your customers, then the brand that you have is the bundle of assurances that those promises will be kept. And the assurances can be a different bundle if you are a company that's selling different things. It can be different resources that you want to feature. It can be different associations. It can be different solutions. It can be different histories. even though it's the same company, you can emphasize different things. So in that case, your brand is directly involved in your ROI, and the better you can do it, the better you're going to do with your return on investment.
Well, you keep you continually are saying things like brand return on brand and return on investment, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, to me it's impossible to say that 30% of anything can be proven of ROI if in fact it is concentrating, say, on certain features. I'm not actually sure you can do that. I mean, I think in the perfect world you could. But I don't. I mean, I'm listening to you, and I'm hearing. You know, this is kind of like marriage counseling. I hear you, but I don't agree with you.
Okay. Well, remember those are for small to medium-sized companies.
Sure.
The 30% that I was talking about are for the large companies. There's a great thing that people may want to look up called the cash value of brand equity, and it's why people are ready to pay more for a Coca-Cola than they are for another cola they've never heard of. And the difference in that is pure profit. And that's why you get that 30% bump for big companies.
Do you think the same thing is true if you're a business-to-business?
Oh, absolutely. Look at IBM. There's an old saying, nobody ever got fired for buying IBM.
But can you compare IBM to sort of a mid-sized B2B company that's out there promoting what it is that they do, which is already complicated enough in most cases? You know, to have it have kind of an immediate effect seems a little, out of the realm of possibility. Well, it's possible, but out of the realm of probability.
Well, for your example, suppose we had a competitor of an IBM service or that they're delivering, or a hardware that they're delivering. I guess they're more in the service business now. And if I'm a local guy and I've got a relatively small business, I may not want to be of such tiny interest to such a big company. I might want somebody that's closer,
mm-hmm.
that understands me and gets where I live, and who's going to be reliable. That's a huge part of that smaller vendor's brand.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talk to our clients a lot about the local and the regional being based on their size, being so much more crucial than, you know, all of these national big hits that people want. Because the local does, it builds the brand quicker, and it also keeps it in the community, if you will, even regional, mm-hmm. even for certain regions. And you're right, they would be seen as a... rather than a kind of a cog in the wheel, they'd be seen as somebody very important because they are, nearby and nimble and accessible. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of our business involves taking our clients and making sure that they're publicly active, if you will,
mm-hmm.
through speaking engagements and appearances and all kinds of pieces of content, et cetera, et cetera. We do a lot of local because we know that that's exactly what people want. They want to know what's around them. And particularly, David mentioned B2B. I mean, you know, you can't get much better than a local B2B service that has the chops to do the job and is who knew enough to get a company like ours to provide what the differentiator really is and stress that, you know, to within an inch of its life. So for us, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think that it makes much more sense for companies to look around them and see, you know, where they belong.
Yeah, and I would go even further on that. I think that for small service or product companies, it's very concerned about the word of mouth and reputation.
Mm-hmm.
They know if they do a bad job or have a bad product or a bad experience for one of their customers, if they're a local or regional company, people are going to talk to each other. And I believe the statistics are that somebody that likes something will tell 6 people, and people mm-hmm. that have a problem will tell 16 people.
I think the whole idea of buzz is an extraordinary, specifically today when we're in the most networked world ever,
mm-hmm.
people, and it works in both ways. I mean, your reputation can be made over the course of many, many, many months or years, and it can be destroyed in a matter of moments, thanks to our social networking and so much of what goes on. And you're right. I mean, I think reputation is a huge part of this. And the funny thing is that reputation falls under that umbrella of areas that are really hard to put a number on. You know, I mean, it's obviously incredibly important, and it has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't say that, you know, somebody's good reputation, was the element that built the company, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's actually talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
If I'm the owner of a company, and I know that I need a new marketing campaign, if I base the marketing campaign solely on trying to create hard ROI, isn't it possible that I'm in danger of missing the intangibles like the buzz, reputation,
mm-hmm.
et cetera?
That's kind of what I was saying earlier. That, I mean, I think that people get caught up in a numbers game, and they forget that, you know, the energy and the behavior that companies like ours, where we take a message and, you know, get it in places that are obviously reaching customers, but are also reaching, so-called decision makers, or, you know, we love to use this term, thought leaders. But they get a sense of who somebody is through these intangibles that are really necessarily, well, they're part of what we do. They're part of what all of our companies in who actually work with clients. It's part of our job, but it's also something that we have to make sure that our clients appreciate and understand just how important it is for them, so that the other things, the things that do eventually reach the one-to-one ratio, do it because that reputation was built solidly.
Tony, what are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing is that I'm all for the intangibles, but I believe that the intangibles need to be informed by the better the facts are, the more creative you can be. You can't really create in a vacuum. And I'll give you an example. I think one of the smartest branding situations I've ever seen is an old one. It's the Michelin tire with the baby sitting in the middle of it.
Right.
And that came out of information, studies that showed that over 60% of new tire purchases are not made by men. They're made by women who are mothers and wives. It was just brilliant. And all you had to do was see that image. And right away, you got the message. Another company that did a great job of that was MetLife,
mm-hmm.
when they were talking about it's about the if in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they used Charlie Schulz of Peanuts.
They didn't use Charlie Schulz because he was long dead, but I get your point.
To get the message out and to illustrate it. And the fact that they could take life from MetLife and take the IF in that word and make it a different color was just brilliant.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the Peanuts, and this is not a small thing. There was a huge controversy over the use of the Charlie Brown characters,
mm-hmm.
Peanuts characters. Yeah. I don't know if you're aware of this. People talked about this on social media and in many places, because one of Schulz's ideas that he stayed near and dear to was that he never wanted adults to have a voice with the Peanuts gang. And
mm.
here they were having these conversations with adult insurance agents, and
mm-hmm.
it kind of broke the mystique. And they allowed it, Charles Schulz's state allowed it, but people, you know, people who really love the wah-wah that parents would say and teachers would say to the kids, you know, they really felt abandoned. They felt as though it was that the Peanuts gang had been whored out, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I mean by reputation. I mean, people have to pay attention to all sides of it. I mean, there's a hugely famous example of reputation being just pretty much, you know, thrown away temporarily by the Tropicana orange juice people, who, you know, felt that they wanted to look more like those generic cartons on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And so without, you know, asking anybody, without talking to their, you know, beloved buyers, they went and they changed that really terrific straw through the orange that had been on their carton for decades, if not, you know, I think it's like many, many decades, and they changed it to something wholly generic and completely boring, and people went nuts. And this is not just in social media. I mean, this is an actual reputation killer. They admitted later on that because they had to change it back, of course, that mm-hmm. that was their worst quarter on record. People stopped buying it. They literally stopped buying it because they felt like, well, if you're going to look like the generic, we might, you know, and of course mm-hmm. the Tropicana premium is more expensive, we might as well buy the generic.
Well, you know, let me ask you both a question, actually, around this issue of reputation and buzz and things that seem to be somewhat intangible, and I'm questioning whether or not you can actually measure them or not. From the client's perspective, how do you satisfy clients if your campaigns are based on intangibles?
I believe, I know this is supposed to be a face-off, but I believe that PR and social are natural partners with online customer targeting. And here's why. When people search, as we said, they have 50 to 70% made up their mind already what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the internet search is a great place to sell, but it's not a great place to raise awareness.
Right.
People have already decided. PR and social are the place to raise awareness.
Yeah.
Okay? By targeting venues, by targeting messages, and where we work with PR and social is being able to ground what the topics are for particular constituencies, sometimes very narrow, for to target various venues. What magazine should you be in? What article should you be writing? What according to the editorial schedules and what have you? What buzz should you be on? And it's very interlocked. On top of that, by targeting the customers and then measuring the difference before and after you do a PR or you do a social media campaign, you can monetize PR. You can monetize social media.
Oh, you can definitely monetize it. People's reputations are not necessarily built on, you know, the good or the bad things that they say, mm-hmm. because there's no judging. It's usually on, for a brand or for a brand advocate, the person who's speaking for the brand, it's usually how useful they are to the people that are taking in what they do, what they have to offer. There is definitely a way in social that you can see high jumps in traffic and in purchases based on the flow of information that's coming from social media. I think that people take that stuff very seriously. They like to know that they're not being sold to, but they're being spoken to, mm-hmm. and there's information and lots of really, you know, excuse the expression, but fun stuff that's mm-hmm. being bandied about. That's a technical term, fun stuff. And, we have seen huge leaps through social that have surprised us, and it's usually because of something that somebody does we've advised that really brings out, a whole sort of slew of knowledge that people who are either lucky enough to follow them or happened upon them or were thrown in that direction because of what was going on in PR really got a good whiff of and understood and appreciated it, and then decided that they wanted to be that customer, and that works very well, David, in the B2B world.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say I'm in the leadership of a company that's been around for a while. There's a market for what we sell, but we seem to have plateaued. We've gotten stuck.
Yeah.
And we realize that something around awareness is probably an issue, which speaks to me of, you know, maybe marketing, maybe PR or something under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to do something new.
Mm-hmm.
Where should I start? Tony, why don't you go first?
Well, of course, we're in love with what we do. We think we've got the cure to cancer. And I'll give you an example. We have a client that's a smaller company, and they were selling moisture-wicking T-shirts, sleepwear, what have you, in competition with Under Armour.
Hmm.
And if you know how to search and run the search engines backwards, you can find also the features, the solutions, and benefits that people are searching for, as well as products. And we found a huge demand for sleep disorders, for perspiration comfort, for hot flashes and night sweats, the menopausal market, for campers, for occupations where people are hot and cold all day long. In the first year, we got their sales up another 40%, and it changed what the company was really about and opened all kinds of markets just by targeting what people wanted and redefining who the customer was.
Richard, where do you think I should start?
I have to say that over 50% of the companies that approach me, and I've been in business for over two decades, have that problem, or at least assume they have that problem, that they've gone stale, that people have forgotten them, and usually it's one of two things that have happened. One, they've sort of just fallen off the earth, if you will, because their marketing dried up, or they just weren't paying attention to the world at large. Or two, they've forgotten what people loved about them to begin with. So if this is a company that's been around for a while, our job is to find the connector that brings people either back or allows them to think it's the first time they've been in love with this product or company, even though they've been around for so long.
All right. So I didn't get you to butt heads completely, but
mm-hmm.
but we've at least identified some differences.
Yes, we definitely identified differences.
Yes.
Good. So I wondered, before we close, if you could each name one or two resources that have been influential to you in your work that listeners can access to learn more, particularly as it might relate to the points that you made. Richard, why don't you start?
Well, I like people whose ideas are wider than anything that I could think of, and not to sound conceited, but that's pretty rare, because most people are just regurgitating what they've heard from others and just putting it in nicer language, if you will. But people like Doc Searls, who really sort of gets what marketing is all about, and PR is marketing, everybody forgets that, has been very helpful to me. I've actually gotten to know him, and he's the author of the Clue Train Manifesto, which is sort of a classic non-marketing book, and he's been somebody influential. And another guy who's around, and a lot of people like him, but I just think he's pretty awesome, is Tim Sanders, and mostly because he reminds us of the humanity of what we're doing without making it seem, because the problem with a lot of these big thinkers is that they try to make you believe that you can be just like them, when it's impossible because they already have this following. He likes to look at the world in a much bigger place and how it affects us as people, and I appreciate that as opposed to the so-called gurus that walk around saying you can do exactly what I do, which is impossible.
Sounds good. Tony?
Well, the first one is, I was very lucky And my original degree is in industrial design and graphic design, but it was from the Bauhaus out of the Illinois Institute of Technology in Chicago. And the whole thing at the Bauhaus is that form follows function. That's actually where it came from. So the two businesses I built and the business I'm building now don't start from what we can do and go forward. They start from where we want to be and work backwards. And the advantage is that if you start from what you can do and go forwards, you're sort of a prisoner of your past experience. If you imagine where you want to be and work backwards, then you see the holes that you need to fill. And you can do a real quick back of the envelope risk reward to see if the investment's going to be worth the probable rewards. So that's been invaluable for us in developing our processes, our programs, and our strategy. The second, of course, is Sun Tzu's The Art of War, to hit your enemy where they're weak. And so what we're doing for our clients is saying, okay, you can't win with these keywords. These are the keywords that there are low competition and high sales that nobody's looking at. These are the voice of your customer telling you what they want. And that's how we're able to multiply results and immediate ROI for our client companies.
These are great examples. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Tell me what you're working on now that is very exciting.
Tony, go first, because you've got this. You've got what sounds like a new company.
Okay, well, it's new, but it's been around for 8 years.
Oh.
But what's new about
new.
It is
what
we were doing manually, we're now doing in a program fashion 10 times the size. So that's exciting.
That's really exciting.
But the two things, projects we're working on now is for an international and national sales training company who is partnering with us and who can now use our process when they go to sell their own sales training instruction and value, because the clients are going to sit there and say, well, you know, you guys are terrific. You come well recommended. We believe you work hard. I believe you get us. But we're on zero-based budgeting. How are you different? When can I project return on investment? When am I going to see new sales? And working with us, they can say you're going to be able to project return on investment on new customers in 30 days, and you'll be able to pull those customers in 60 to 90 days. The second thing that we're working on is very interesting, is we're increasingly getting into cross-border, where European companies want to do business in the United States, and instead of shaking the dice and hoping it'll work, we can show them exactly what their markets are by the numbers and who the customers are and what they need to market and how they need to do inventory, whatever it is, so they can decide how and what to sell when they enter the United States. And it works backwards also for U.S. companies wanting to go out of the U.S.
I started 2015 with a lot of change. We moved our offices for the first time in a very long time, and we haven't changed our methodologies because it works. We've kept it the same way. But I started a book project that I had been doing in seminar fashion for the last couple of years. And it came out of the personal branding craze during the recession, where people were saying, you know, become your own company and blah, blah, blah. And that message kind of seemed all about money and less about substance. It was like, you know, sell yourself. So I came up with a program that is pretty simple. It's a way for people to take all of the things that they do every day, all the tweets, all the statuses, all the postings, all the pinning, everything they do, and learn how to make it work for them, as a differentiator, as the one single element that will have that person stand out. And the title of my book and the title of the program is How to Fame, and it will be out later this year.
That's
wow.
Terrific.
Both doing such exciting work.
It's
Richard,
fun.
Why don't you tell listeners how they can learn more about you?
Sure. Obviously, you can come to our website, which is rlmpr.com. Many people in PR and also people that are in marketing know that I'm one of the two people behind the Bad Pitch blog, which is at badrelease.com, which is, of course, the way for people to learn about all the terrible pitches that are out there in PR land, which is almost 10 years old, believe it or not. I didn't think blogs would ever be 10 years old, but they are. So those are two ways to reach me, and I think I'm pretty reachable.
And Tony, how can listeners learn more about you?
Well, they can certainly come to our website, which of course is under being revised, but it's okay now. And the website is, of course, www.emarketintelligence.com. Anybody can reach me. Best way really is my email, which is tonyg@emarketintelligence.com. That would probably be the best.
That
sounds
true.
Great.
You know, people still use email. I forgot about that.
Yes.
they do use email, and some people even use the phone.
Yeah, I use the phone. I refer to the phone now as the killer app. So, people obviously can reach me at Richard. Thanks for the reminder, Tony. Richard@rlmpr.com.
Okay, terrific.
Great. Oh, thank you both. Tony and Richard, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guests have been Richard Lammer, CEO and founder of RLM Public Relations, and Tony Grass, president of eMarket Intelligence. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.